good afternoon and welcome back to the Tribune podcast. Apologies first of all that we've not been with you that frequently this season. We've all had various other bits and bobs to be getting on with. But we have decided that we would like to do a few Tribune podcast specials this season. So maybe not as regularly as in previous seasons, but at least every now and again to give you a few updates about what's going on over here in the Bundesliga and in German football in general. So we thought today, what better opportunity than which is already one of the biggest games of the season, Borussia Dortmund against Barcelona this evening in the Champions League. So I'm on the train on the way up to Dortmund now, where with Jonathan Harding.
Hello,
Jonathan.
Hi, Matthew.
And we'll be talking about Dortmund in depth a little bit later on when we actually get to Dortmund, about their season so far and about the game tonight, of course. But we thought, well, we've got a little bit of time on a relatively quiet train on the way up through the Rhineland, that we can discuss the Bundesliga so far. And I think particularly the two teams making most of the running and making most of the headlines so far this year towards the top of the league, RB Leipzig and Bayern Munich. And coincidentally, they both played each other at the weekend. So fancy that working out so well. An early battle at the top finished RB Leipzig 1, Bayern Munich 1 on Saturday. Let's talk about the game first of all. Jonathan, a fair result in the end, or how would you summarise the game?
Tricky, really. I mean, is it a fair result? I think if you're Bayern Munich, you probably say no. Dominate the first half. Niko Kovac said that he thought that was the best half of football that he's seen them play under him. And to draw, I think, is disappointing given how dominant they were in the first 45 minutes. Lewandowski scores after 3 minutes. You know, you think they're going to run riot and score three or four. But in the second half, it probably did deserve to be a draw. The game was far more open. Even though Bayern were good in the last 15 minutes, I thought the Leipzig did deserve a point on the basis of the second half. It was definitely one of those cliche situations where it was a game of two halves.
A lot changed at half time, didn't it, when Nagelsmann abandoned his 3-5-2 for more possession football to an old school Red Bull 4-2-2-2.
Yeah, it was almost like he abandoned his own philosophy for the sake of the draw, which I think is a sign of a good coach if you can get the result. But it was interesting because there seemed to be a suggestion after the game that Oliver Minzlaff and Ralf Rangnick were watching on. There seemed to be a suggestion from Minzlaff that Rangnick was somewhat confused or bemused that Nagelsmann took so long to change. He's been praised for being such a tactically savvy coach, and yet it took him such a long time to do something about the fact that Leipzig were obviously being overrun. I mean, Bayern were completely in control, and I think that's the disappointing thing from Kovac's perspective, and really reaches into that issue with Kovac. Can he take them to the next level? You know, well, based on the first 45 minutes, they're already there, but based on the second, no. And I think that's the problem, and it will continue to be the problem for Kovac. You know, he's obviously a good enough coach to get the job done in the Bundesliga, but Bayern Munich want to win the Champions League again. They want to challenge at the next level. They want to be a powerhouse in Europe. And I think the question marks remain as to whether Niko Kovac is the right guy to do that.
Let's discuss that a little bit later on, but let's remain for the time being with Red Bull Leipzig and Julian Nagelsmann. Obviously, a lot's been made. It wasn't a surprise move. The move from Hoffenheim to RB was announced last Christmas, wasn't it?
I think so.
We knew this move was coming. Nagelsmann knew it was coming. And Julian Nagelsmann has gone to Red Bull, being quite open, quite explicit about the fact that he's very appreciative of how Rangnick has had them playing. He likes the high pressing and the aggressive transitional game that RB have played so well in recent years. But he sees he sees room for improvement in terms of possession of the ball. So he's saying, Red Bull are great when they're not in possession, when they can win it and break quickly. But what about when they have to break down deep line defences? To what extent do you see him already being able to implement a slightly more possession-based style of football?
Well, it's always hard, isn't it? I mean, possession-based football is almost, you know, dying out. You know, who does that anymore? Joachim Löw, on international stage, has had to change from that. And not many teams are capable of doing that anymore. I mean, Leipzig have built their entire identity and philosophy off being good in the transition. And you know, even in this game, when he made that change, they were much better. I think it's a slow to... to happen so far. If you look at the opening game against Union, they were also very good without the ball, reactive, destructive when they took the ball off Union in that 10-second period after in transition.
Although admittedly against the Union team, who were naively open.
Yeah, of course. But I think in terms of philosophy, I haven't seen so much in the opening stages where he's able to have them controlling games in the same way that I think a Bayern Munich will have done in recent seasons. I'm keen to see the development, but I think it's hard because I think Leipzig's player set and the personnel they have is geared towards quick transitional football. And I'm not sure how well you can play possession-based football with that squad. I think what was telling in this game was that they didn't have Kevin Campbell. Yeah. And I think he's very important for the dictating nature of that kind of style of play. You don't have him, you don't have that tempo setter in midfield. And I thought that was a problem for a side that has ambitions to have more of the ball.
No, I think that's definitely the case. And I think it's also definitely one of the contributing factors as to how Bayern were able to dominate that midfield so easily in Leipzig, especially in the first half. Just looking back at the lineups there now, that midfield three, that midfield triangle for Red Bull of Sabitzer, Forsberg and Leimer. I mean, only Leimer there is any sort of holding midfielder. Yeah. The other two, I mean, especially Forsberg, had a very good game, didn't just score the pen for the equalising goal, but also had a good game generally. On the other hand, Thiago, Müller and Kimmich, I thought, yeah, absolutely dominated proceedings. The perfect example being Müller's winning of the ball on the left-hand side in the build-up to the first goal. It will be interesting to see how Nagelsmann goes about making that change, because it's a very well-embedded and very successful system that Rangnick has had Red Bull playing over recent years. But I mentioned this a few times last season. I think it does hold true that when you play that style of football, especially when you're looking to compete on all three fronts with several games a week, Champions League, DFB Pokal, Bundesliga, you're, by its very nature, going to get caught out. And Nagelsmann's been quite clear in saying that. So he just wants to make those tiny adaptations. It doesn't mean abandoning that style of play. He showed with the transition at the weekend that that's very much still part of his plans. Yeah, especially when he's got limited time to train and the player's got limited time to recover in between games. The word he's used a lot in interviews is that he wants relaxation time, drawing games for his team on the ball, so that not just going full throttle on the transitional.
Well, it's not sustainable, is it? You can't play that way for a full 90 minutes. You've got to find ways to rest or relax in the middle of the game. And that's really the great skill of coaching and of creating a team philosophy built around transitional football, that if you can have moments in a game where you can take a brief moment of recovery whilst without losing control or your footing in the game, then that's a testament to a style of play. I don't think Leipzig are there yet, as we saw from the first half, but very encouraging that they come out of this with a point.
Quick word on Timo Werner. After a few rumours about where he could be going, could he be staying, could he be off to Bayern, could he be off to Liverpool, he signed a new contract. He's remained in Leipzig.
Yeah, I think it's the best thing for him. I think he knows that he's probably not going to spend the rest of his career there. Leipzig probably know that as well. But for him to spend a year, maybe a year and a half, working under Nagelsmann is a great thing for his development. And it's only going to push his price up, so far as I'm concerned, when he comes around next summer or the summer after, comes to him being let, being bought by a bigger team, whether that is Bayern or not. I don't know whether he would work so well at Bayern, actually. The more I think about it and the more I watch Bayern Munich, appreciate how amazing Lewandowski is and how much of a force he is. I don't see Werner as a similar type of player. I don't think he could lead the line at Bayern.
Even before Werner's did sign his contract in Leipzig, Bayern have been quite open about how they didn't see him as a direct replacement for Lewandowski, more of a replacement for Thomas Müller, in fact.
And I find that that would be a waste, given how Werner has played in this team and how devastating he's been in the transition and on the break. I think he's got to play for a team that plays very fast. I think it'd be great at Liverpool, for example. Yeah. A team like that. He'd score 25
best
goals.
Of that was a couple of weeks ago away at Borussia Mönchengladbach when he scored a hat trick.
Exactly.
So if anyone can speak German, or do an English translation for us here. Now, that's confirmation that we're not making it up. We aren't really on a train. Timo Werner, hat-trick away, Gladbach, all three goals to be scored on the shoulder of the last man, where he's so dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's the team he's got to play in. It doesn't need to be playing in the 10 behind someone like Lewandowski. He needs to be leading the line in the right type of football, I think.
Will there not have been a part of Timo Werner thinking, you know, before he signed that contract extension, no, Red Bull Leipzig are the future dominating force in German football?
It's a possibility, but I don't think he's thinking that. I think for anybody who plays for Leipzig, I think they're interested in the project. Mm. They're interested in the opportunity to play Champions League football, and they're interested in playing for a coach like Julian Nagelsmann. And when I say, because I think the last 2 points are self-explanatory, when I say they're interested in the project, I think they're interested in playing for a team that has a very clear philosophy. I don't mean anything to do with Red Bull. I think that's almost irrelevant for players. I think it's about having a style of play that is very aggressive, very attacking. I think that's why players are interested in going there. And, you know, obviously playing in Europe is a big reason. I think it's a stepping stone for a lot of players to go to big, big clubs, or, you know, in some people's minds, actual football clubs. I don't think Timo Werner thinks that Leipzig...
Meine Damen und Herren, wir rechnen den Kölner Hauptbahnhof, der Ausstieg bitte fahrt Richtung rechte Seite. Auf Wiedersehen und vielen Dank für Ihre Reise mit dem Intercity der Deutschen Bahn.
I don't think Timo Werner thinks that Leipzig are going to be some great force in the future. They will be competitive, but I don't think that's the reason a lot of players go there now.
Okay, I think before we now move on to Bayern Munich, I think it'd be unfair not to mention the main man at the other end of the pitch for RB, which is goalkeeper Peter Golasi.
Mm, had a fantastic game.
Outstanding, wasn't he? If it wasn't for him,
Niklas Süle
would have had a late winner.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Golasi has been underrated in recent years, and you know, he's not really been considered as being an elite goalkeeper. There's been lots of talk about Neuer or Trapp or Sommer. You know, there's lots of other names being thrown about, but really, when you consider how amazing Leipzig's defence has been, yes, okay, part of a good goalkeeping performance is having a good defence in front of you, but if in those moments where you have defensive lapses you can make those saves, yeah, says a lot about him as a goalie. I think he's been very, very consistent. I think that's what makes him so good. And on a night when both goalkeepers shone, it was interesting to see that Neuer, you know, was matched basically at the other end of the field, and that's not very often the case.
Yeah, important to have a safe pair of hands behind
a
Red Bull Leipzig defence, which is notoriously vulnerable to set pieces as well. So,
German defence isn't these days?
Well, there we go. let's go back to Bayern Munich then briefly. Headline in Kicker magazine in front of us here is that of cats and mice. Hmm. There's a nice quote which I've highlighted where the journalist in Kicker has said that Bayern were carrying RB Leipzig, as it like a hunting trophy, in their mouths in the first half. Such was the control of the game. Like you said, Kovac said that was the best half of football that Bayern have played under him. They were dominant, but they've not been like that all season, have they?
No.
Started off with a disappointing 2-2 draw.
Yeah, I was there for that, and that was a very odd performance from them. I mean, you know, Lewandowski has basically been the reason that they're even in the early stages of the season. I still feel like everyone else is trying to play catch up. I mean, he has been unbelievable. I mean, the benefits of having a summer off and what a fit and healthy Robert Lewandowski looks like compared to one in January is drastically different. But the rest of the team seems to be sort of slowly finding its feet. I think part of the problem is this experimentation with Kimmich in midfield. Really don't like it. Obviously, you know, each to their own, and Kovac seems to want to persist with it, but I think
also seems to be nailed down position in the national team as
well. Yeah, which is so strange. You know, you're taking one of the best players in his position in the world and moving him to another position.
Fantastic cross with the ball as well.
I mean, obviously people will say maybe that's not the point of Bayern, they don't want him to cross, but when you look at how often Coman and Gnabry deliver low crosses and you consider how good Lewandowski is in the air, it seems remiss to me to not have him there at right back, especially when you have midfield options anyway. You don't need him to be there. I mean, the national team's another conversation, but at Bayern, that's one thing I'm slightly concerned about. I mean, as for them generally, yeah, they've been a bit slow to start, for sure. I think not losing this game was a plus on paper, but afterwards, not winning it is the frustration. And it's Bayern Munich. You know, if you don't win every single game, there's going to be scrutiny, there's going to be pressure, and it's just a question of how Kovac deals with that going forward. They didn't have the best of summers in the transfer window. They didn't have the worst. Mm. They did get enough done. But it's very interesting that in this game, Kovac chose to bring on Alphonso Davies and not Coutinho, yeah, or not Perisic, which suggests that Davies' standing in the team has gone up, and that's fine. I don't have a problem with a young player getting opportunities, but, you know, you've got a very big squad, and there are players there that may be capable of delivering more or less, and if you've got to win a game, who do you want to turn to?
Coutinho made his debut away at Schalke in a 3-0 win for Bayern on the second match day of the season, a game which stood out really for Robert Lewandowski's hat-trick.
Incredible performance.
What effect is Philippe Coutinho going to have on this Bayern team? First of all, purely tactically in that midfield, but also I think what's interesting from a mental psychological point of view, because it seems that with his signing, with the arrival of another big name, that seems to be exactly what Robert Lewandowski has been waiting for, and what he's been well, he's not been quiet about it, has he, in the press in recent years. He wants big names, and he's got one. He seems happy as well now.
I think if you keep your top striker happy, I think that's a good thing. I mean, his performances certainly suggest that that's played a role. I think with Thomas Müller now 30, I'm not saying he's over the hill, but you do need a different type of playmaker in that role. Coutinho is offering them more depth. It keeps players happy. I think after a window where you clearly missed out on Leroy Sané, and it looked like for all the world he was going to join had he not been injured, it's difficult to promise all your players, all these new players coming in, not have them. So I think Coutinho is important for the morale of the team. Tactically, I think he fits perfectly in that 10 role. You'd have quite a nice link up between him and Thiago there. I think there's a good connection that can form. You need to have another way of feeding Lewandowski other than just out wide, because it can be quite easy to close them down if you only play one dimensionally. He needs it as well for his career, so I think it's a mutually beneficial relationship if it goes well. So it can work out for Bayern, but I'm quietly reserved on it, because it's not the Hollywood signing that I think it's being made out to be. This is a player who hasn't played very well consistently for a long time, coming to a team in desperate need of instant impact star quality. If he can bring that, great, but I'm sceptical.
Quick update as we make a quick stop at Cologne Hauptbahnhof. A few people getting on and off, and then we'll continue our trip up to Dortmund via Dusseldorf, I think. Are we changing in Dusseldorf?
We are changing in Dusseldorf, right? Fortuna not playing tonight.
No, maybe one day. Interesting. 1-1 draw with Wolfsburg on Friday night for Fortuna Dusseldorf.
Was the ball out? Was it not? Who knows?
I don't know how they've got away with that. If anyone's seen the replay of that in the build up to Fortuna Dusseldorf's opening goal against Wolfsburg, I mean, the ball is for me clearly out of play on the right hand side, and the VAR's not stepped in. Let's not take anything away from Nico Gieselman, who's fired an absolute screamer into the booth.
Great way to score your first ever Bundesliga goal, right?
Definitely. So have a look at that if you haven't already. Going back to Bayern Munich, before the arrival of Perisic and Coutinho, and while the rumours with Sané were ongoing, Lewandowski had obviously, like I said, he'd been vocal in the press, and he wanted big name signings, he wanted players who could fit straight in, who didn't have an adjustment time, ready-made star names, which he thinks are worthy of Bayern Munich and worthy of himself, and to match his own high standards. He also said that it'll give him a chance to take a rest from time to time, watch games from the side from time to time. I think even he knows that he's not getting any younger. As impressive as he's been this season, and he's definitely got a few more years in him, he knows that he won't be around forever.
Well, that's what Ian Robin did so well towards the end of his career. He recognised that managing his own fitness was the key to prolonging his playing days.
But with Gnabry, Coman, and now Perisic and Müller,
there's options there.
Yeah, Bayern have options out wide, but what if Lewandowski gets injured?
Well, I mean,
Jan-Peter Arp?
Yeah, well, he may be a little bit young to throw into the deep end, but I'd still be tempted even if you had that. I mean, the option of playing Müller up top could work, especially if those players behind him do most of the running. Mm-hmm. Müller's still good enough to score those goals. You can also, if you want to, play Coutinho in the false nine, have a lot of wingers out wide and have him drop deep. I mean, there are options there. And I think the only way to get around it is that unless you find someone like Sandro Wagner who's happy to play B striker to Lewandowski, there's no way to have a backup striker for him because he's so good. So have a different way of playing.
Looking at the upcoming fixtures for Bayern Munich, on paper, relatively favourable run of fixtures. Cologne at home, Paderborn away, Hoffenheim at home, who are certainly not the team they were last season under Julian Nagelsmann. For Augsburg away, Union Berlin at home.
Yeah, all
five
of those games.
Eminently winnable fixtures to Bayern.
Have to win all of those games. There's absolutely no question.
What position would that put them in terms of a title challenge? Or is it far too? Is it too early to tell?
It's way too early, but it's their title to lose again. I mean, Leipzig are obviously early runners. in terms of challenging, but let's wait and see. You know, we've had this conversation a number of times. Julian Nagelsmann has not impressed when he's had to deal with European football, so he's going to have to deal with that. How Leipzig adjust come December is another thing. Playing in two competitions, well, three competitions.
Wunderschönen guten Tag, meine sehr geehrten Damen und Herren. Herzlich willkommen im Intercity der Deutschen Bahn auf der Fahrt nach Emden Hauptbahnhof. Mein Name ist Lorenzo von Matta und mein Team und ich werden Ihnen bei Fragen, Anregungen gern zur Verfügung stehen. Wir wünschen Ihnen eine angenehme Reise. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome aboard this Intercity train to Emden. We wish you a pleasant journey.
Interesting that the train announcer announced his name and introduced himself perfectly to the passengers in German, but not in English. Thank you for that, Lawrence. No need to check our tickets either then, mate.
No, I think that run, Bayern have to win all of those games. I expect them to as well. Leipzig, I feel, will fade eventually unless Nagelsmann can change to possession-based football faster than he is showing. And yeah, then all eyes will be on the other team. Challenging at the top, and that's the one we're off to watch this evening.
Yeah. Finally, yeah, well, Niko Kovac, what's his standing in Munich at the moment?
It's difficult. I think the club is in a bit of transition with Oliver Kahn coming in and obviously Uli Hoeneß stepping down from the top role. The changes upstairs will have a big impact on the club generally in the next few years. I don't think Salihamidžić has covered himself in glory. It wasn't necessarily the best summer for him. So that all affects Niko Kovac. That all affects his ability to work. It sounds like the criticism of his work last year is something that he's taken on and he's accepted going forward. I think the best signing that Bayern Munich made this year was Hansi Flick as their assistant manager, the former Germany assistant manager. He was one of the best and smartest decisions they made. He is an incredibly smart football man. So I think he's got the right people around him, and I think the right things are happening upstairs to take the pressure off him. It'll be interesting to see how he handles it, but I think this is the year where if he doesn't make the semi-finals of the Champions League, he might not get a third stab at it. I think the expectation is for him to win the league. The cup is a bonus, but if he wins the league and makes the semi-finals of the Champions League, I think he would have enough argument. There'd be enough evidence there to say I deserve one more year. If he doesn't make the final four of the Champions League, then I think he's definitely gone, and I think Bayern will make a change.
If they were to win the German Cup, that would be a third consecutive German Cup for Niko Kovac personally,
yeah,
wouldn't
right.
it? I do agree with you. I think he is making progress. I think he is taking tactical developments on board. I think he is becoming more flexible than the Niko Kovac that we saw at Eintracht Frankfurt, and there's all sorts of reasons for that, but for the time being I think we are seeing signs that he's becoming more flexible, whether it was his approach to the 3-0 away at Schalke or the 6-1 rout of Mainz.
Having gone a goal down.
And then followed by what was very much the cherry on top of the season so far for Bayern Munich. That was that first half away in Leipzig on Saturday. So yeah, it's left both RB Leipzig and Bayern with interesting starts to the season, and we'll be sure to follow how that progresses throughout the course of this season. As we said, we'll be back for the second half of this podcast when we arrive in Dortmund. We're hoping to line up a few guests and talk to a few people in Dortmund before kickoff tonight against Barcelona. So we'll talk a little bit about them when we get there. So for the time being, thanks very much and see you in a bit. So welcome back to part two of this Tribune podcast special. John and I have arrived in the city of Dortmund, and we've taken a couple of trams to the high street and plonked ourselves down outside Kevin Grosskreutz's pub. Where else are you going to go
on a
Borussia Dortmund match day?
But I think he's not here today.
No. Kevin Grosskreutz is not here today.
Yes,
why not? Tini, I thought you were inviting him.
Maybe he has to play at Udding, I don't know. But last time he was here. Yes, because he had a red card in league, and so he could sit here and eat a salad. Not drink a beer, but eat a salad.
That sounds like a typically Kevin Grosskreutz story. Pini, introduce yourself.
Okay, I'm Pini, a supporter of Borussia Dortmund since 1991. I fell in love with Borussia, but my first match since I always visit Borussia, it was 1999. Yeah.
And since then, you've watched Borussia Dortmund play all over Germany and in several countries across Europe.
Yeah. So all the home matches and sometimes away matches, sometimes in Europe. Yeah.
But never against Barcelona?
Never against Barcelona. Only at TV when I was 14 or something like this, because 97-98 we played versus Barcelona, and I would say we were the favorite because we won the Champions League and they just won the smaller European Cup.
So that was the Super Cup
European Super Cup, yeah.
After Dortmund had won the Champions League in 1997, and Barcelona had won the UEFA Cup.
The Cup of the Cup Runners, I think. Yeah.
Well, not cool,
the
UEFA Cup. Yeah. Okay, my mistake.
Yes, but they won also the Super Cup.
Okay.
Yeah.
So hoping for a better result tonight. Pini, before you were talking about the discussion around Lionel Messi. Is he going to play? Is he not? We're still not sure. We're thinking maybe on the bench. But you were saying you hope he plays.
Yes, because he's a fantastic player, and of course, as a football fan, you want to see all the fantastic players. And if we win the match 3-0, then it's better to win against the best team of Barcelona.
And you think that's possible tonight?
Everything is possible. Okay. But the chance is 10%.
Why not? I mean, Borussia Dortmund coming off the back of a very impressive win at the weekend against Bayer Leverkusen. There's definitely goals up front. Dortmund are dangerous going forward, aren't they? So why not?
Yeah, maybe, but Barcelona is a big name, so it's a lot of good players. They also won at the weekend, so we'll see.
Do you think that having such a big name in town, Barcelona, will that change the atmosphere at the Westfalenstadion tonight? What can we expect?
Oh, I think every supporter of Borussia is very excited to play versus Barcelona, very motivated to support our team. If we would have today the match versus Praha,
Slavia Prague.
There were not so much people, and I'm not sure if the stadium would be sold out. But versus Barcelona, it's clear everybody wants to go there. Yeah.
You're right, and even in the half an hour or so that we've been in Dortmund this evening, we can see several Barcelona fans knocking about. There's a lady decked out in Barcelona and Catalan gear taking photos of Kevin Grosskreutz's pub, because obviously she must be a massive Kevin Grosskreutz fan. John, your first impressions of Dortmund on the big Champions League night?
It always feels different in Dortmund, and we were talking about earlier, I've been to Munich on Champions League nights, it just doesn't feel the same. I feel like there's more things to do in Munich. You know, I think the choice is more complicated there, whereas here, you know, in European nights, it feels different, it feels special. I mean, whether it's Barcelona or it's Sparta Prague or whoever it is, I still feel like there's something different about coming to a game here, and I think that's obviously linked to the fact that football is so important in this city, and it's so linked to the community, and it's obvious to see. You know, there's just a different feeling in the air, and that's noticeable just from a normal match day against Augsburg as well. You know, there's something very different about it. I'm just curious about how you feel about that as a fan, Pini. Like, do you what is it that you feel that's different on a European night to a Saturday afternoon?
So sometimes it's more positive because it's special to win when the floodlight is on, and there are so big teams from other countries like today or like Real or like Manchester United. The worst.
I've got bad memories of that from 1997. We're not talking about that.
Yeah, maybe in the future. But the bad thing is it's always very late. A lot of people can't go here because they can't come back, and it's very late to come back if they come. Yeah. So that's a negative side. But of course, it's a good side, good thing to play versus the big teams. But a lot of people are. It's a regular, it's not new. Only Barcelona is new, and so everybody is again excited.
Slightly different opponent tonight to some of the opponents in recent weeks. Like we said at the weekend, Dortmund beat Leverkusen very, very convincingly, 4-0. And that was a really good comeback, wasn't it, after the disappointing result in Berlin before the international break. Pini, you were in Berlin, I believe, weren't you?
Yeah.
Sorry to bring up bad memories, but
That's okay.
Well, can you maybe you can just describe your day? What was it like? I think Dortmund fans were very excited about going to Union Berlin. It's a classic old stadium, a good atmosphere, but it all went wrong on the pitch.
Yeah, everybody liked it to go to Union Berlin because it's an old stadium, a new opponent, a new team. Our old player, Neven Subotic, was there. And then everybody thought, yeah, and then we win. And the players thought the same, I think. They went on the pitch and thought, okay, it's okay. And Union fighted a lot of more and was very good at the defense. And if the defense is massive on the other side, it's difficult for us. And so, yeah, they were better.
Dortmund have been so dangerous at the front this season, John. Why did they struggle to break down Union Berlin, but were able to smash far past Leverkusen?
They're always better against teams that play. Yeah. Union are not a team that play. I mean, that's not a criticism of them, but they just sat back and were very deep. Leverkusen.
Well, the one time they did try to play was against Red Bull on day one, and they
got exposed. Yeah, exactly. And Leverkusen under Peter Bosch, they're a team that play very attacking football. They like to have the ball a lot. They like to come out. Havertz is there, you know, dictating play. And that's what Dortmund want, because if they do that, it opens up the spaces for Dortmund to exploit. And with players like Sancho and Alcacer and Royce, when those spaces arrive, you have the quality to take advantage. Dortmund have always struggled, but against teams like that. I mean, I remember even under Thomas Tuchel against Darmstadt, even in the last year of Klopp,
yeah,
it was the same problem against these smaller teams.
The problem is 7 years old.
Yeah.
And it's always the same.
Is it a mentality thing? Or is it... Because Roy said after Union, we always think that we have the quality to win games, but we have to also realise that we have to have the determination to win games. Is that how you feel as a fan sometimes watching them, or is it just
So the defence is a problem if the other team is very defence,
yeah.
But at Union it was also a problem of the attitude,
yeah
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Why is that? Is that Favre? Is that, or because you said it's been around for a long time, is it because Dortmund still hasn't gotten over the fact that Klopp is no longer here and they can't win the title, or is it?
I think it's because sometimes it is like this. Every few months there is a match like this.
Okay.
It's not the problem.
But
Bayern
don't have those games. That's my
thing. Also part of the reason why Dortmund were able prepared to pay 30 odd million and everyone to bring back Max Hummels.
Sure.
Does he bring a better mentality to Dortmund? And two, is he accepted by the fans here?
About that? Because, I mean, he said some pretty
He wasn't very popular when he left.
Yeah, he was not popular. Yeah. And now he is a bit popular. It's okay. Everybody think it's okay because he adds motivation, emotions, good defense, and he opens the match, and it's okay. I would not buy a tricot with a shirt with his name. And I think a lot of people won't do this, but it's okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Would you buy a shirt with Jadon Sancho's name on
it? Yeah, of course. He's a very fantastic player. Yeah, and
you're someone that watches him most weeks over here. I think people do watch him in England and also further afield and wonder how this teenager is getting on in Germany. What are your impressions as a Dortmund fan?
Yes, everybody loves him because he's a young player, he's a talented player, he plays very nice to see, nice for the people. It's very good, and it's a young player also. Everybody knows he will leave us in 1 year or 2 years. It's okay. Everybody will be happy that he has played here. So very proud that he plays here.
Yeah.
It's okay for us.
I think he contributed another two assists, I think, or at least was involved
Leverkusen,
in two of
yeah.
the goals against Leverkusen at the weekend. We can't not talk about him. So, John, how's he done this year?
He's done brilliantly. I mean, we've only had four games and plus the cup, but I think tonight's going to be a really good test. You know, against another team that likes to play. You know, possibly the best team in the world in terms of playing style. I'm really keen to see how he gets on in, under the floodlights. Like you said, it's a special occasion. Is he going to be able to produce the same quality that we've seen him produce on a Saturday afternoon? I mean, it's a really good opportunity for him. He will have the space to do it. I don't think he's going to struggle. It won't be like Augsburg or Union. He'll have the opportunity. And I haven't seen him in his career not take the chance when it's come around. And if he does it tonight, Dortmund might struggle to hold on to him in January, you know? I mean, I love the fact that you said, though, Pini, that you, that Dortmund will be proud to have had him.
Yeah.
And because I think that's so true, you know? Teams can't hold on to players forever. It's a bit like Pulisic as well, you know, you had him, but you made him what he is. And I think that's such an important thing. And if the club is okay with that, and if the fans are okay with that, then that's great. You know, if there's any friction there, then it's problematic. But it seems like Dortmund have accepted that. And it's okay for them to be that club that develops those talents.
Do they? Do you accept as a Dortmund fan that maybe players will see a transfer somewhere else as a better progression in their career? Like Pulisic, Sancho might go in the summer.
Yeah, for me it's okay. And for the 100,000 fans who are really around the club, it's okay. They know it is like this. Oh, okay. For the people who just follow it, one who just reads the forum or reads the magazines one time a week, they don't agree, I think. They say, oh, we have to be Bayern Munich, oh, we have to buy everyone, and oh. But if you know the club and the football, you know, it's not right.
Last season, as we spoke quite a lot about on the podcast as well, I think Dortmund came so close to winning the league.
Yeah.
The fans never gave up. I think even from the second or third to last match day, there was that big banner away at Werder Bremen saying it's not over until it's over.
Yeah.
You as fans never gave up your belief. It wasn't enough in the end. Do you have confidence this season that there can be another challenge for the Bundesliga? Is it important?
Yes, of course we hope it. Because we bought good players, that's okay. And of course everybody hopes that there's a chance, because always the second, third, fourth, it's not so exciting. And so everybody hopes it. But do you really believe it? Don't know, but we believe in hope.
What's more important for you, progression in the Champions League to the next round or the Bundesliga?
Bundesliga, always. Yeah. Champions League doesn't matter. Maybe we come to the last eight teams, okay, maybe, but it doesn't matter so much. So Bundesliga is much more important.
You've got an interesting group, Inter Milan, Barcelona, Sparta Prague.
Yeah.
Will you be going to the away games?
Yeah, I think so. If I get tickets, I go there, and if I don't get tickets, also.
Were you talking about getting the train to Barcelona?
Yeah, I want to travel to Barcelona by train, because I have time. I've got a week time, and so I think I go there by train. Maybe I'm the only one, because everybody flies there, everybody goes by bus maybe, but I like trains.
So there will be Dortmund fans who get the bus to Barcelona?
Yeah, maybe.
Dortmund.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe there will be buses. I don't know, but I think it's not planned already, but maybe there will be. Yeah.
How long will that take?
Oh, don't know.
A day?
Don't know, a day, yeah, maybe. Yeah. But earlier, 20 years ago, they went by train to went by bus to all these matches.
Yeah, right.
To Deportivo La Coruña, to Real Zaragoza, to Barcelona, to Real Madrid.
Amazing.
They always traveled by these buses. Yeah.
John, how do you see Dortmund's chances this season? We were talking on the train a little bit, weren't we, about Lucien Favre, how when he arrived in Dortmund, he was only given a 2-year contract at the start. So
yeah.
I think Dortmund saw it as a very much an interim solution,
yeah,
if you can call 2 years interim, after the fluctuations under Peter Bosz and then Peter Stöger. Well, he did his best, didn't he? He stabilised the club because things went really downhill eventually.
Yeah, I like Peter Stöger.
Yeah. Well, you liked him because he just about sneaked Dortmund into the top four.
Yes, he had the job to stabilize the club and not go down and maybe get to Champions League, and he did it.
Yeah. What do you think
it's okay.
What do you think about Favre now then?
I think he's a good coach because he taught the team to play football again. they couldn't play football in the year before. They could do nothing. And so he taught. In the first half year, he taught them again to play football. We were very good. Mm. In the second half of the last season, you need an aggressor, motivator, something, someone like Jürgen Klopp. And he is not Jürgen Klopp, but I think there are not a lot of coaches who can teach good football and who can motivate the people. And so it's okay. He cannot do everything. He's not God.
That's exactly what we were talking about on the train, isn't it, John?
How
do you see Lucy Favre's position? Do you agree with Pini he doesn't quite have the aggressive side?
He's a good coach, there's no doubt. But I think that Dortmund, after Klopp, will forever be a club that needs that manager. It needs a manager that stands in front of the Zood after the game. It needs someone who's passionate. It needs someone that's loud. And it's about finding that balance because, you know, Tuchel was too much of a coach,
yeah.
And Favre is for me almost in the same direction. He's very quiet. He always says the same things in his press conference about the other team.
Slightly concerning at the point last year. I think it was after the Werder Bremen game, wasn't it? Or after the Schalke game.
He said that the title was over. Gone. Yeah, and you can never say things like that. But I think the problem with Favre is that I don't think Dortmund can get any better under him than they are right now. And I think if they want to win the league, then they have to get better. And I think he's done a great job, like Pini said, of bringing football back to the team. Some of the football they played last season was beautiful to watch. But that next step is the ability to have the strength of mind to win the games against Werder Bremen last season, where you can't lose a 2-0 lead. You know, those situations
where... Do you think it was the problem of the coach?
I think he...
Because the goals of Werder Bremen, it was like in a youth league match.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that's Berkey, that's on the team, yeah. That's on Nkanji.
It's like watching John on a Monday night.
Yeah, it's like watching me. But you have to... Yeah, it's not on the coach directly. I think it's on the players as well. But I think the coach is also responsible for the mental strength of the team. And I think, players need to take more responsibility. So having someone like Hummels is a good thing. But Favre has to do a better job of motivating that group and making that a stronger group, saying things like, oh, the title is gone, or that's not helpful. But even starting the season saying, we have to win the league, is this team ready to be that team to say, we're going to do this? I don't know. I'm curious to see who comes next, because I think Dortmund and their fans, obviously just from my perspective from the outside, you need someone emotional. The last few coaches there hasn't been that connection. And whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, this club now, because of Jürgen Klopp, needs that image. It's now based on that image. And I don't know. It's hard to find, because you need a coach that is obviously a good coach, but at the same time understands the connection between the community and the football club and how important that is.
After bringing in Mats Hummels, Torgen Hazard, William Brandt, Nico Schulz, are Dortmund not well within their rights to come out this year and say, we want to win the league?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, they can say that. I mean, you know, after last year. But it's not about the quality. It's about the mentality. Are you ready for that? Obviously, they have a lot of good players. I still don't know whether they can win those games against Paderborn or Augsburg. Okay, Augsburg they just beat. But, you know, those games. That's my concern. When I think about Bayern Munich, I don't have any concern about them winning those games against Mainz. They won 6-1. It doesn't matter. They have this mentality of like, we're going to win. We go a goal down, we're still going to win. And with Dortmund, I just have this feeling, there were so many times last season where they would concede one and they would suddenly forget how to play football. They would be at home and suddenly everyone would be really nervous. And you need two or three players in the team to just pull everyone together and say, this is ridiculous. We're at home, we're a better team, we're going to win this game.
The example that springs to mind when you mentioned that would be Hertha Berlin at home last season.
Unbelievable.
Dortmund led twice, but Hertha Berlin came back twice.
Or Hoffenheim, that game as well. You know those, and you cannot draw or lose those games. And that's my concern.
Mainz at home as well was very close as well, wasn't it?
Well, with Berkey made that triple save at the end. But those are the situations. You know, even he talked about it. You cannot sitter. You can't shake as much as that in those games. You're Borussia Dortmund, especially if you say we want to win the league. You have to back that up with this strength. And I think that's why I'm a little hesitant to say, even though Dortmund look great on paper, the difference is definitely on the field. And I still think it's Bayern's title to lose.
Do you agree with that, Pini? Do you think is that true, that Dortmund still have mental weaknesses?
Maybe, we'll see. But the problem is, today you have to win 30 matches or 29 matches or 28 matches
to win the league.
Yeah. 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, when we dominated the league, we lost a lot of matches. You now you look in the statistics in the yearbooks from then and you see you lost there, you lost 5-0 in Karlsruhe, you lost. Today you would be the third or fourth with the league.
Yeah.
But everybody thinks, in the 90s we won every match. But it was not like this. And so today you have to win a lot of matches, and you have if you have small problems, you can't win the league. That's a problem, although it's on a high level.
So before we finish off, there's been a few interesting developments on the famous yellow wall this season, haven't there? At the end of last season, I think, yeah, as always, Borussia Dortmund's supporters impressed. They're famous around Europe and around the world for their displays, choreographies, how loud they are. But last season, the fans weren't happy with their own performance, were they? They announced in one of their leaflets at the start of this season that they thought the performances on the pitch were good last year, but the performance in the stands were not. Was that the case, Peony? Was that a normal opinion at Dortmund, that the atmosphere was not very good?
Yeah, I think it is the case, and everybody shares their opinion, I think. Even official people from the club, people from the yellow wall. I think it's common sense, yeah.
What's the reason for that?
Why?
Why do they feel the atmosphere wasn't good? Because to people who don't know, obviously it looks good every weekend.
If you ask three people, you get 10 opinions.
Right. Okay.
And it's very difficult, I think. One thing is, okay, you never believe you can win the championship. You always think, you become the second. And it's boring always to know.
That bite at the end.
Yeah, yeah, that's one thing. The other thing is the people on the south side are older than earlier. There are not a lot of young people. In the past, we came on the tribune with 15, 16 years and wanted to shout. And the tribune today is always sold out, and there are not a lot of people who come new. And so people get older, want not to shout, not to support the whole match. And then the third thing is the yellow wall is very, very big. The ultras stand there behind the goal. And then they start to sing, and I stand 100 meters above them. And when I start to sing, they have already finished. Because it's such a big tribune that it's difficult to have all the people singing, shouting all the time. And of course, there are a lot of people who only stand there because it's a cheap place. It costs 10 euro or something like this. My season card costs 219 euro for 17 Bundesliga matches. For 17 matches, yeah.
I think that's actually one of the most expensive in the Bundesliga, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. But it's not expensive, it's very cheap. Yeah.
Is that one of the reasons why people don't move when they get older?
Yeah, of course. It's very cheap. And it's difficult to move because all other seats are sold out.
So what are they going to do, or what's the suggestion to improve on that? How do you make support better if you've got fans who are older and fans who are, you're not bored but frustrated that they can't win the league? How do you improve your support?
So
big questions for Peony.
Yes, the ultras now stand. They changed their places a bit, so they were all down and in the middle. Now they're down, and
they've spread out.
Behind the goal. I don't think it's the right thing, because of course, okay, they're spread out. But in my opinion, I have to stand in the middle of the tribune to reach all the people.
Yes.
It's difficult because ultras have to stand behind the goal and this and that and so. But it's difficult to change with 500 people the place.
Yeah, of course.
But I think you have to stand in the middle, because in the upper blocks, in the upper area, there are also people who want to sing, but they are really, really far away. And so, in my opinion, they have to stand in the middle of the tribune. The main supporters group is called the Unity. So if you want to unite the people, you have to stand in the middle, I think.
Yeah.
That's one thing. Another thing is, okay, we say we can get champion, okay? And, So I think now if it is like this, if you can lose your season card if you don't go to 10 matches or something like this. And so I think last year 500 people lost their cards because they didn't visit so much matches, and now there come new people, and maybe that helps.
Okay. Yeah. So the solution seems to be either Dortmund win more games on the pitch, or you make the Südtribüne a little bit smaller.
Yeah. Yes, but even versus Leverkusen, on the south side it was okay, but in the forum, in internet forum, we won 4-0 versus Leverkusen. And so people are not satisfied, they are not happy. They always say, oh yes, but this, but that. So we are we have not a lot of success, so the people go out of them. Yeah. But we're not too less, we're not so bad that a second plans or 4-0 is a success.
Yeah.
So we are lost in
between.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's really interesting. Thanks very much, Pini. Yeah. Thanks for your insights.
Okay. Thank you.
Really interesting stuff. Before we finish, we've got to have a quick prediction,
yeah,
haven't
right.
we? Pini,
what do you think?
What's the score going to be tonight?
2-2.
2-2. I'd say that'd be an exciting game, wouldn't it?
3-3.
3-3.
4-4.
4-4. Full time at the Westfalenstadion in Dortmund, finished 0-0, which might come across boring on the final score sheet, but was actually anything but. Certainly one of the more exciting 0-0 draws that I've attended in recent memory, definitely. And I think, all things told, a rather fortunate point, arguably, in the end for Barcelona. Given the second half that Borussia Dortmund played, they can be extremely thankful to come away from here with a point tonight. And largely thanks to another German goalkeeper, Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, who had an absolutely outstanding performance in goal for Barcelona, saving a penalty, among other saves, from Marco Reus after... I think Jadon Sancho was fouled in the box in the build-up to that goal. But it was a really impressive second half in Borussia Dortmund. They had Barcelona with their backs up against the wall, up against a raucous yellow wall. But the atmosphere was fantastic tonight at Dortmund as well. Jonathan, there's a lot to digest in that second half, wasn't there? You managed to write an article out of all that excitement. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, it was. I thought it was a really... thrilling way to open the European season for both sides. I was pretty disappointed with Barcelona, to be honest. I thought the move from them to bring on Messi straight after Reus missed the penalty was quite telling. It was almost like, right, get him on. We need to do something. We haven't done anything for the first hour, and nothing much happened. He wasn't fit, obviously. They didn't really do very much. They didn't really have any playmakers. So I wasn't that impressed. But on the flip side, from Dortmund's perspective, I thought that was... I can't remember a better game that Mats Hummels has ever played in his career. Quite timely, considering the whole conversation with Joachim Löw. And if they were a little bit more composed, they would have got off to a flying start. It was a sort of a 9 out of 10 situation for Dortmund, almost perfect. But, as always with them, you don't want to be too negative on a night like this, because there was much to be praised. But this is the Dortmund that we know. They're good when they play against teams that open up, that play that kind of football, that don't just sit back. And they're good when it matters, on big nights or in big games, or games that they're expected to show up for. They don't have a problem with that. But the question is, can they transfer that to your home games against, your Nurembergs or your Hoffenheims or your Hertha Berlins? And that's where I think the difference between Borussia Dortmund being an exciting team to watch with lots of talented players and Borussia Dortmund being a winning team is going to be. That's the difference for me.
I think you're right to say that they benefit from having space in behind against a team like Barcelona, who did try to have a lot of the ball. I think the difference between tonight and Leverkusen, though, is that although Leverkusen had a lot of possession and gave Dortmund space in behind to exploit, I thought tonight Dortmund created that space for themselves. Like, in particular, I thought Axel Witsel and Thomas Delaney had another good game together in front of the back four. Marco Reus dropping in there and working hard to help out as well, and Hakimi and Sancho again providing a really good outlet going forward, although Alcacer was arguably a little bit quiet up front. Michael De Silva's also here, from Rebellion Magazine and a colleague of ours over in Germany. Michael, your thoughts on that? Would you go along with John's conclusion, or what stood out for you today?
Yeah, largely. I mean, I think I think Barca were there to be had tonight. I think there were times when they looked a little bit lax at the back. Like Roy, I think the main chance in the first half for Dortmund was Marco Reus, and that came about purely because Piqué was wandering up the field like completely out of position. And I mean, if Dortmund had been a bit more clinical in those kind of situations, and they were a bit unlucky, the Brandt shot in the second half that crashed off the bar, they really could be, they could go from a very good team to, you know, really top class European. But until they really do that, the jury to some extent is still going to be out on Dortmund.
Well, do you think it's to some extent a lack of consistency in it? And if so, who's to blame for it, if blame's the right word? But where does that lack of consistency come from in Dortmund's game?
Well, I mean, I was speaking to Axel Witsel after the game, and he was saying that he can't remember the last time that Dortmund kept two consecutive clean sheets, Leverkusen at the weekend and now this one. And I think therein lies part of the problem. They need to be more consistent at the back, and it's good to see them doing that.
I think Mats Hummels had a really important role to play that today, as John pointed out in the piece he's written.
I don't think I've seen him play that well in the last 2 years or so. That was a real standout performance from him, and him and Akanji, I think, were really, really solid. If Messi was 100% fit and starting, then yeah, obviously there would have been more for them to think about. But
yeah, there was a lot of excitement around Lionel Messi this evening, wasn't there? I mean, talking to a lot of the Dortmund fans pre-match, that even Pini mentioned it pre-game, didn't he, that he's excited about seeing Messi at the Westfalenstadion. I was talking to quite a few Dortmund fans before kick-off, and they were all saying, this is the sort of game that we've dreamed about, having Barcelona playing here against Borussia Dortmund. They said, you know, this is the sort of dreams you have as a kid, and here it was finally happening. And Borussia Dortmund more than played their role. And if it wasn't for, it wasn't for Ter Stegen, they would have come away even, you know, 1-0, 2-0 winners there. Ter Stegen's performance came on the back of a long distance spat, war of words. What we're going to call it with Manuel Neuer. If people aren't quite up to date with what happened there, I think after Marc-Andre ter Stegen was once again overlooked at the international break, Germany's games against the Netherlands and Northern Ireland in favour of Manuel Neuer, ter Stegen said back in Barcelona that he doesn't know what else he has to do. Neuer then responded after his performance against Red Bull at the weekend, which, as good as it was, Neuer then said, I don't think those comments from Ter Stegen were particularly helpful. Ter Stegen then replied by saying, I don't think Manu's got anything to say about my feelings, it's nothing to do with him. Did Ter Stegen do all his talking on the pitch today, John?
I feel like he's just your move, Manuel Neuer. I mean, you know, this public spat is going to keep going back and forth if it keeps going like this. And
the public spat beside, does Ter Stegen have a point?
I mean, he's had a point for years. I'm not the only one who's talked about it. We all have. I mean, Manuel Neuer, you know, did unbelievable things for the goalkeeping position in 2014. Nobody denies that. But there was a point where his form dipped and he was injured for an incredibly long time. And at that point, Ter Stegen was playing the best football of his career at the biggest club in the world. And I can understand his frustration because Joachim Löw was going, he still wasn't picking him. And I think anybody would be frustrated. He even said, Löw cannot expect for people in the selection process who are not playing to be happy about the fact that they're not playing. Of course Ter Stegen wants to play. And his problem is, and he can't do anything about it, he's older. If he was 2 or 3 years younger, I feel like he would definitely be set up to take over the number one jersey and he'd play 100 games for Germany. But at this rate, you know, Neuer's going to stay there. He's the only player from this post-Russia Rio era that has remained. And that's concerning because he wanted to start a new era, but he's kept Neuer. I just don't think you can leave the best goalkeeper in the world out of your starting 11. And quite frankly, the way that he played tonight is just proof of that.
I completely agree with that. And who were the best two German players on the field tonight?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mats Hummels and Marc-Andre ter Stegen, exactly. And neither of them play for Germany.
Exactly. So. Sounds like a headline, that, John.
Yeah, or a tweet. Yeah, I mean, look, to be honest, the Hummels thing is complicated for a number of reasons. I think he's a very big personality. I think he's a very confident man. And I think I can understand the reasons perhaps from that side of not having him in the team and wanting to make a clear break, because in an international squad, those kind of personalities can be quite domineering. They can control other groups, and if Löw wanted to make a clean break, then that's fine. If that was the case, though, then Neuer had to be in the same boat and also be kicked out, for me. So that's a little bit of mixed messaging from Löw. From a footballing perspective, it's clear that Mats Hummels still offers a thousand things that Germany don't have, so that's difficult to swallow.
The thought that he put in on Lionel Messi, on probably the only time that Messi set off on the dribble into the box, Hummels, more than stood firm.
Yeah, and that's the kind of aggression that you need in those games, and sometimes Dortmund are missing. The ability to just... And it was funny, while I was watching someone two or three rows in front of me, a fan shouted, "Just get stuck into him." And then he did. But Dortmund haven't done that in a lot of games. They sort of dance around and wait, and you need someone to just be aggressive. Okay, sometimes you might foul him, but it's okay. You know, now we're in the game. He knows I'm there. Let him know. Get involved. And Hummels did that really well. And the thing about that tonight was that 99% of the time, his timing was just unbelievable. He was right on every header. He was right on every outstretched leg. He was always intercepting the pass. Afterwards, he was told, "Mats, you finished the game with 100% tackling percentage." He said, "No, I didn't. I missed two challenges against Suarez in the box." He already knows in those moments what he did and didn't do. And when he was pushed and said, "You know, was that the best performance you've ever played for Dortmund?" He said, "How many games have I played for Dortmund? 400? I'll get back to you once I've gone through each and every one and reviewed it."
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about both, especially Ter Stegen. I mean, there's no reason why he should not have had a run in the Germany team by now, at least to show that he's capable of the same form at national level as club level. He's one of the finest around. But I wanted to raise also the issue of another German player who was playing tonight for Dortmund as substitute, Julian Brandt. I thought he came on and really, maybe not changed the game, but he just added something that they were missing before.
Well, he certainly came within inches of changing the game dramatically, didn't he, with that?
It was an incredible shot.
Off the bar in the second half.
It was incredible, and it just dipped and swerved and looked like it was going over. But
the only time where Ter Stegen looked completely helpless.
Not that
night.
You can really blame him.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, if that had gone in, it would have been an absolute thunderbolt. And I think Brandt really offers something. And I think Thorgan Hazard has got something to offer in the future for Dortmund, but he looked a little off the pace tonight.
He did, but I did think that in the first half, and a couple of Dortmund players did talk about this afterwards, Hummels, but also Delaney and Berkey, the defensive work done by those front three was really impressive. And Hazard was one of those players who didn't offer very much offensively, but defensively was consistently tracking back and supporting. And I think when you have wing backs, you know, like Hakimi, that you're looking to provide extra support to, because you know they can just run off into the distance and not cover their space coming back, I think it's important. So I can understand why Hazard started if he wanted to play that way. But I think when you realise that you're actually controlling far more of the game than you're expecting to, that's when you can turn to Brandt and say, right, we're in the front, you know, we're in the front seat here, we can be more attacking.
But I think, to be honest, Favre probably should have realised that before the game, given Barca's form.
Yeah, that's also true.
And
yeah,
given the fact that Messi was not likely not to start. And I think he could have seen that coming and started with Brandt.
But Favre has long had a problem of substituting too late and not well in his in his career, let alone just at Dortmund. And
I just feel like those kind of small changes from the technical area could be the difference between drawing this game and just getting a 1-0 win.
Yeah,
easy to say in retrospect, but you know, there is a case for that. That he could have been a bit braver.
If Hummels gets his header right in the second half. I mean, it's not just Royce's penalty or Sancho in the first half or that great save from Ter Stegen against Royce. There are so many moments.
So many variants,
where if Hummels, who arguably deserved that goal, it would have capped off an incredible performance. And if all of that goes right, you know, you're looking at a 2-0 win and everybody's saying, just like last year when they smashed Atletico and everyone suddenly perked their ears up and, oh, Borussia Dortmund, here we are.
Yeah.
You know, that was an opportunity for them. But I still think there were a lot of positives to take from the game given how they were last season and how frail they've been. The key for me, as I said earlier, is just that they have to take it into a week-in, week-out situation. They have to make that their mentality. Whether they're at home or not, they have to accept the fact that they are the second biggest team in Germany and that they're capable of winning those games. And they've got to go and do it. Take the same aggression.
And they have to win when they're not playing well, which is not always the case.
No, it's not easy. And it's not always easy. But the sign of a quality side, it almost sounds too cliched, but it's to win those games ugly. And Borussia Dortmund need to learn how to do that.
Who would have thought would have been so much to talk about from a 0-0 draw on the opening night of the Champions League? I think as we've covered there, I mean, whether it's clues that Borussia Dortmund's mental strength as a team is improving, whether it was Mats Hummels cementing his return to Dortmund with a really impressive performance at the back, whether it was Ter Stegen's impressive performance at Barcelona, which shores up his claims to the number one jersey at international level. All sorts to go on tonight. I mean, we predicted before the game, was it going to be 4-all, 3-3 or 2-2? Well, it was 0-0, but it certainly wasn't lacking in excitement.
No, it's also worth pointing out that I thought the support tonight was a notch higher than it has been in recent weeks. I feel like Borussia Dortmund's fans...
Given what Pini was saying...
Absolutely.
And given the criticism that Dortmund's fans have made themselves in recent months, I certainly thought that tonight... The yellow wall and Dortmund
was
and
all the
cliches that go on about it. I thought it lived up to expectations.
Yeah, and especially that moment just before the game started, where out of absolutely nowhere they started saying BVB, shouting it from south to north. I thought that was, and it was a wave of sound. I think even the Spanish journalists who I was sat next to suddenly were a bit surprised at how loud it was. And
that continued all the way through.
It was really impressive.
It reached a cacophony at the start of the second half when, in the build up to the penalty, there were several. Well, I think Dortmund won a series of corners, and the volume increased rapidly at that point. And you could tell they were appreciative of the team's efforts at the end. I mean, the way the yellow wall responded to the team at the end, you would have thought Dortmund had won 3-0. So yeah, certainly a lot of positives to take tonight from Borussia Dortmund's point of view. And hopefully you'll have taken some positives from listening to this Tribune podcast special. Like we said at the start, we've not been doing it as regularly this season. We're not doing it at all, actually. But we'll be trying to do a few less regular updates, which hopefully will be just as informative and give you a bit of an insight as to what's going on over here in Germany. So thanks for listening, and talk to you next time.